Welcome to the Millennial Soul Food Podcast. I'm your host, Keyonce. This is episode 25 with Dr. Kate Thomas. Enjoy. What's up, what's up, what's up? It's your girl, Keyonce, in the building. I am so excited to have on this guest, Dr. Kate Thomas. She is an amazingly adept and knowledgeable witch, spiritual mentor, all of it. But first, I kind of wanted to talk to y'all about some announcements that I have. So I'm teaching the second cohort of my MSF Cyber Witch and Tarot Academy courses, and that's going super well. I'm going to open up registration soon for the next cohort, the third cohort, and somewhere around the beginning of May to mid-May. I have a lot of stuff going on towards the end of this month, so I want to keep that kind of free. So watch out for that. On the next podcast episode, I can announce those dates more specifically. If you want more information about the Cyber Witch Academy or the Tarot Academy, just go to my website, millennialsoulfood.biz, and check that out. Also, I'm on, 420, I'm going to be doing a workshop on cannabis and spirituality. So we're going to dive deeply into an exploration of this feminine planet, or of this feminine plant, because you can't smoke, you can smoke it, but if you don't smoke the female version of the cannabis plant, it doesn't give you the psychoactive effects. So I think that is worth exploring. We're also going to talk about ways that you can explore your own spiritual development through cannabis. We're going to talk about, how some ways it can be abused, like anything. But principally, we're just going to dive very deep into the history of cannabis and how we interact with it as a spirit. Also, let me think, what else is happening? Full disclosure, your girl has been going through a breakup. A very strange turn of events happened. And me and this person separated. But this is kind of a message for my diviners out there. If you feel like something is up, you might not know what is going to be happening in the future exactly, but always pay attention to your intuition, because your intuition, 9 times out of 10, is not lying. It's not over-exaggerating. So I'm going to just say that. Listen to your intuition, family. Listen to your intuition. That's all I'm going to say about that. And I'm releasing the relationship with love and gratitude. I learned a lot of great lessons. I learned a lot about love. I learned a lot about pain. I learned a lot about pace. I learned a whole lot from the relationship. So with any relationship, you got to take the good and the bad, and you got to figure out how you're going to learn from it in the future. So I don't know. I think this past full moon, there is a lot of testing energy with relationships, and in the end, your girl is here. I'm happy, and it's about to be summer 2021, so I'm trying to be out in these streets again. So what's up, period. Anyway, I love y'all, and I hope you enjoy the show. Oh, and I think I also forgot to mention, if I didn't already mention this, the cannabis and spirituality workshop will be hosted on my Patreon. So that is patreon.com/millennialsoulfood. Go there, sign up. There's also a lot of other material. There's many courses, and you'll also get access to the previous live streams that I've done. So there's so much content on there. So go and support your girl. It's very simple. And I hope you enjoy the show. So I just want to introduce Dr. Kate Thomas, the Women's Spiritual Empowerment Mentor, Psychic Ritualist, featured in Vogue magazine and The Independent. Welcome to the show!
You are so excited to be here. This is literally the highlight of my week.
Oh my God.
Month, year, what am I saying, week? It's the highlight of my week. Can I say fuck?
Oh, you can say everything you want to. Yes, this isn't going to be monetized on YouTube or nothing. I'm not putting this on YouTube either, but this isn't monetized or nothing like that. You know, you can say everything you want to. I actually work with Kate on social media. So I run her account for Ouroboros Limited Editions. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, and also just you're a friend. But yeah, I think I did a workshop with you first, and then it was on intersections of spirituality and social justice. It was really great.
I found you on social media. I was looking for Keon. That was a cool story, actually, how I found you.
What? And
yeah, I told you at the time. I think you were just like, who's this crazy white lady?
No, I wasn't.
I was like, that's legit. I would feel the same. Yeah, I was looking. I just had this like super strong guidance, I guess that's the best way of putting it, that I needed to find somebody that would be able to talk with authority about social justice, spiritual practice, and that intersection. And so I was, you know, everything's through Instagram. I live on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So I was scrolling through Instagram, and I don't know how I came across your page, but I saw one of your reels and I was like, I love this person. Who is this person? I love them. And then I sent you this gushing message being like, oh my God, I think you're exactly what I'm looking for. And yeah, but it was very cool, because then when we had that first, look, sorry, I've taken over, I'm sorry.
No, I want you to talk. Just say everything. Yeah, everything.
Because what I remember is the first Zoom that we had, you were like, I have that book. And you pointed out, we had a collection of like super obscure, weird ass, spiritual occult, and bonded over that, and that was very meaningful to me. And yeah, and so then you came and did an amazing workshop, one of the most popular workshops in my mentorship, Spiritual Life Upgrade.
Really?
Yeah. How are you surprised? Wow. I love you. Everyone, of course, loves Keon. Yeah, so that's how our relationship began. And it.
Yes, I love the workshop, because like at the end, it's fun to just spill tea and talk about what I'm going through also. Cause I like it cause it's an intimate setting on Zoom. And then, yeah, they were just so cool. And I'm always doing some shadow work. Always got something to talk about I'm doing a lot of deep shadow work right now, Jesus. Anyway.
You're not doing it right, you know? If you're not doing the shadow work constantly, if there's not some fucking bullshit up in your business, then you're not doing spiritual life right, I don't think.
Yes. So tell us about yourself. I know you as the luxury witch.
Luxury witch. Although, you know what's funny is for years I had that title. I gave myself that title of the luxury witch, which I thought was really funny, because it's a play obviously on luxury bitch, but I reckon 40% of people get it. And so a good 55% of the time people are like, why do you call it, what you were like what's America? forget it, never mind. But yeah, I called myself the luxury witch for a while, because I'm a Taurian. I'm the sort of strongest expression of Taurian energy that I think I've ever encountered. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but you know, I like my luxuries. Mm-hmm. I fundamentally in like luxurious way of living, as it should be a fucking entitlement for everyone.
Exactly, and you're also critique capitalism too. So that's like the way. Yeah, just keep going.
Yeah, that's so important, isn't it? Especially, yeah, thank you. Because I think
luxury can be anti-capitalist too.
Absolutely, luxury can and is intrinsically, I think, actually anti-capitalist. People do think that it's integral, like integral to luxury is anti-capitalism, because capitalism has got nothing to do with luxury. Capitalism is about exploitation. Capitalism, anyway, we can talk about capitalism until the fucking cows come home, but that was not the question you asked me, but this happens. What was I saying? Yes, so I called myself the luxury witch, and it sort of brought me a bunch of like clients who didn't get that I was trying to be funny. And anyway, it's fine. I try not to use it so much. But you know, I am a witch, I guess that's the key thing. I like luxury and I'm a witch, but yes. Yeah. So now my work is focused on my 12-month mentorship. So I run a 12-month spiritual mentorship for women and non-binary people, but primarily for women, and focused on really people that are ready to do the hard work in a, I was going to say in a joyful way. That sounds like it's impossible. People
In a
that are
supportive way, yeah.
in a supportive, exactly, like that ask people, women that are self-aware, that are critical of, the various states of oppression that exist, that are aware of them for a start, and that are actively anti-oppression. So that's really the spiritual life upgrade. So I teach women how to connect to spiritual guidance, their own spiritual guidance, and reprogram the narratives, the stories that culture, society, capitalism, all the rest of it has been has programmed them with, and teach them how to really recreate, create a life that they are excited about, that they feel in love with.
And you have
And
a whole ass app,
a
so
whole
that's a whole ass
app.
app. So that's I'm on the app, y'all.
The
That
app
got
is
my life
good.
together with the money magic, which we're gonna do an IG live on that next week. But yeah, also, oh yeah, I have to get your photo and stuff like that. But yeah, the money magic, your modules are really great. I think that's really cool because there's like a lot of recorded material in there, and it's just material that you can go over and ruminate over. And your videos are really cool, like shot really well. And I like that you like curse and stuff too, because it makes it more relatable, you know?
Saying my videos are well shot, I'm like, fuck, I don't know if they are. The thing is that they're real. Everything is very real. I can't bear this like over-polished kind of anything that's bullshit. I just have such a high bullshit sensitivity. So yeah, you're talking about the spiritual money upgrade, which is my thank you, Keon. This is such a great plug for my
I am a
very
marketer, so you know.
I love it. But yeah, I have a, in fact, today I am launching another program which I am so much more, even more excited about, which I'll tell you about. It's all to do with boundaries. Yes. But the money program, yes, so I created the spiritual money upgrade about a year, maybe 2 years ago now, and that really is a compilation of the key spiritual tenets, I guess, that have allowed me to totally change my relationship to money. Because I think, like most of us, we're brought up to think that money is not for us. At least if we're not cis white men, we're brought up that money is not for us. And that is some fucking bullshit. And I'm here for totally dismantling that. And I think money has been so associated with capitalism for so long. Talking about capitalism, I mean, it does run through all of my work, like active anti-capitalism, because capitalism is, I believe, the absolute root of every other fucking oppression. And
It is economic, the
yeah,
root, yeah.
you're gonna keep everyone poor, and so then we can't
That's
fight back.
energy.
Exactly.
I
And
like the way that you say, like, whenever you talk about how, like, with more money, it like gives you the ability to live as your authentic self. If that makes sense,
right,
it gives you the
all
space to do
money
that.
you have.
It's like Virginia Woolf
Totally.
and what is it, A Room to Her Own or something?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the more money, one of the mantras, one of the affirmations that I received, I got, I guess, is that the more money I have, the more kind and authentic I can afford to be. And if you think about it, it's just true, isn't it? Which means that rich people that are, I was going to say the C word, rich people that are, even in America, this is about it, isn't it? Here in England, we say the C word all the time. It's no big deal. It's
You say that here, people are like, oh, clutch my
It's like, just
pearls.
say it, just say it.
Oh my
But it
God.
makes it even worse when you find rich people that are real motherfuckers, because you're like, you can afford to be kind and you're not. You can afford to act in integrity and with authenticity and you're fucking not. So that makes you 10 times of a piece of a shit than someone that hasn't got any money. I'm sorry, so that's what I think
Exactly.
about
Yeah, but
that.
we can talk about all that more on the IG. Because I love talking about money with you. But anyway, I wanted to kind of get your take on what's happening in the Queen's Court, what's happening over there in the UK, because Harry and Meghan are over here because there is some racism going on and a lot of this is.
Fuck's sake. I mean, okay, so first thing is, I'm just very acutely aware that, like, I am not the voice of, to be speaking about this as a white woman. But
Of course, yeah.
at the same time, I had all this whole conversation with my friend Sabi, who's amazing. You should check out her IG Live on this, the Three Hoodoos is amazing. And she called it, and this morning we were talking about how basically, this is my perspective. I think it is not fucking surprising that Meghan received was on the receiving end of racism. Are you fucking kidding me? Do you know who this family is? Do you know what we're talking? Like, what the fuck were you thinking?
Like, why is everyone surprised?
Right. Like this sort of absolute shock. Like everybody's really su no one's fucking surprised. No one's fucking surprised other than absolutely out of touch, privileged, racist white people. They're surprised. Are they even surprised? They're maybe feigning surprise. How can you fucking live in this world? And I have words fail me, but what I think is, I mean, I think it's good what is happening, but I also think it's not very fucking surprising. And I feel like Meghan deserves all the support that she can get. Who she really needs the support from, though, are white people. Why? Because that's the community that she's been so keen to, get up all in. And it is, I think, really problematic that, like, who, all, anyway, I'm gonna, I'm trying to be like, she deserves everyone's support and protection. Do I think that that's going to be enough to protect her? No, I don't. Do I think that, what happened to her was awful? Absolutely, 100%. But I think that marrying into an institution like the royal family, the British royal family, and their what they are, not just what they stand for, who they are. Like, does she know who she married? Did she
Calling out all over the world, literally have body parts brought from all over the world just to have it's like, what?
Yeah, but she was fine with that. She was fine with that up until she was, like I said this to Sabi this morning. I was like, she was fine with them being them until they were them to her. And I just think that's really problematic. But the bigger problem is not how Meghan behaved. Like, people are gonna like her or support her or whatever. And she deserves support. She should be protected. End of. But the bigger problem is, why have we got this? Well, we know the answer. It's a rhetorical question. We have this horrific institution in the heart of British culture, absolutely toxic, like the epitome of racist, colonial murder and violence. And people on the street that I fucking live on think that they are like to be protected above all else. Like this concept of the royal family and the, anyway, I mean, it's been very interesting because my spouse Ames is American, and they are like, when they first moved over here, they didn't even know who Prince Charles was. And to Richard Wilson, that is, they will deny that, by the way. They will deny that.
Oh.
To a British person, that's like inconceivable. I mean, we might be, we might be extremely anti-royalist, but we will still know who they were all in. I mean, I can list them all. Every one of them. I'm not saying I'm proud of it, but it's very, very unusual to come across.
Nationalist, not nationalism, yeah.
Yeah, but Ames doesn't e didn't even didn't know who they really were and had a concept of the royal family that was just like so more like, oh, have you ever seen those Netflix movies, A Christmas Prince? I love those movies. I fucking love them. That's my ideal Christmas viewing. But the reason that they're so, I love them is because they're so problematic and so awful. And they paint this very, very, very sanitized version of like European royalty, which is just like, super rich people. They're just super rich people that are classy. Like that's the, forgive me. That's the American view of like the royal family, though. I think it's just like the super rich that are super educated and speak with a posh accent. Don't you think?
Yes,
But
exactly.
actually, all European monarchy, but the British, royal family themselves, they are. If there was a personification of evil, if there was a history of true evil, you're looking at them. Like that's where everything that they own, quote, everything that's in their fucking palaces is stolen. It is, taken off the backs of murdered people. Anyway, no, I can go on about it. But so it's really always so shocking to even have even a small knowledge about the history of the monarchy as a British person to see, like my highly educated, intelligent spouse who's American be like, I mean, they know all about the background because they've got good politics. Obviously, they wouldn't be my spouse, I wouldn't be theirs. But they still like had this idea that I don't know that didn't really understand how ingrained this royalism and this monarchy is like into British culture. It's fucking the it's the weave of the fabric of the culture. It's so fun. Anyway,
I
that might.
saw where you posted on, I think it was Instagram. It was this like thing of like these two kids. One of them was like littering, and the other one wasn't, or they were like feeding something, or like, and it was like, which one is pleasing the queen? And
God.
you could check like the one where they weren't throwing trash on the ground. So it's like, so we are doing that to please the queen and not because it's good for the earth, like,
Like that was a photograph of the brownie. So you have the girl guides. So the girl guide, it was like a, so you've got like, I don't know what the beginning, the young ones are. So before girl guides, you've got brownies. The brownies were the little, like, I don't know, I think you're age 6 to 10, you're in brownies. And it's the handbook. It's the little handbook. So it's like 6-year-old Kate had to tick this, like, which of these is serving the queen? And like you say, it was a picture of like throwing trash on the floor or feeding birds. And I was like, I guess the feeding birds? Like, what the fuck? It just shows how it's so fucking indoctrinated. Like, I mean, I'm not young, but I'm not like that was in the late 70s, That was late 70s, early 80s. So
And the one that wasn't the deviant was dressed like a very femme girl, and then the other one was dressed like a tomboy, sort of. So there are some gender, and I feel like implications there too.
Oh, gender. Sure, it's all just a fucking mess. It really is. Like, we live, like, Britain is such a hell. I mean, I don't know where a country is in a fucking hellhole at the moment, but like, oh, God, right now. Sometimes I feel like I'm sitting in a, you'll know this, sitting in the midst of a country filled with like not only not smart people, which is really not people's fault necessarily, but like evil people. How can people, anyway,
I feel like over there, it's like, it's, well, I don't have a concept of what it's like to grow up there, but it's like, it's way more ingrained, I guess, like in the culture, like classism is. Whereas here, there's like a kind of like mirage that classism doesn't exist. And it feels very like TV show, like game show, like, like, ooh, come get the American dream. You can make money everywhere here. It's like, and then there it's more like, it's like ingrained in like accents and stuff like that. Whereas here we do like, I sound Southern, but there's a, I guess not to sound like, I'm the smartest ever, but I have more of a genteel Southern accent, So, we hit we it's different, but over there, I think it's like if a certain accent is just difficult to move up, period.
Definitely. And the interesting thing is that I didn't grow up in Britain. I grew up in Southeast Asia. Neither of my parents are well, they are both British, but like they're both immigrants. So I'm the daughter of two immigrants. So I came to, back from Southeast Asia when I was 11. And so all of the indoctrination, all of the socialization I had was as a child of the colonies, really. So it was almost bottled down. So this idea of you know, the queen as the head of state was really even more strong not living in England. So that when I came to England, I mean, I was born in England and then we immediately moved out. So when I came back when I was 10 or 11, you know, this I had a very unusual concept of what British culture was. I didn't really know what it was. I just knew that certain accents got treated better than people than girls with other accents. And I had a really unusual accent because neither of my parents are native English speakers. So my accent, and I, you know, and I'd grown up in a totally other country. So my, although we spoke English, it was a very, I mean, any immigrant, child of immigrants will know what this is like. You're like, shit, I better work out how to speak this fucking language in a way that doesn't identify me as any more of a outsider or you know, whatever. So the accent that I have now, nobody else in my family has, and nobody else I grew up with had, and it is absolutely a result of classism. I worked out really early, how to speak so that I got in less trouble. Yes.
That makes sense. That makes total sense. Well, speaking of your childhood, what is your religious or spiritual background? Did you grow up religious or spiritual? What's your family like? And
So my family is a fucking mess. I have absolutely like no contact with any of them through my personal choice. So my parents were both brought up religiously, and so Catholic, and yeah, rejected vehemently. And so we were, my brother and I were brought up as that religion and spiritual practice, spirituality was bad, like straight up bad, but also it was ridiculed. So it was considered to be, you know, like foolish or naive or, you know, like that really patronizing way in which people dismiss, well, or anything by you know, just ridiculing it. So as a young child though, I had a whole collection, constantly a whole collection of very powerful mystical experiences, spiritual experiences, religious experiences, one could say. And I had no idea what they were or how to locate them or what to describe them as and what the fuck to do with them. Like I, you know, how would I know? And so I would see all sorts of visions, but I didn't, I mean, I had absolutely no structure whatsoever. So I would try and tell my mother or my parents about it, and they would just laugh at me, just be, you're making it up, ridiculed. And I was like, no, I'm not making it up. And then when they realized that I was serious, they tipped into, you know, like laughing at me because they were obviously scared. You need to paint a picture of why I don't have any contact with these people. But yeah, it was really a mess, but I was just constantly drawn, to all the time drawn to Catholic churches, specifically Catholicism. It was like super strong draw, which yeah, didn't, you know, I did, I couldn't really do very much about it as a child. And it wasn't really until I was much older, 12, 13, that I started to, you know, be able, well, I mean, bear in mind, this is pre-internet age. literally before the actual internet, or at least before the internet was available in people's houses. Like I'm sure the internet existed right in the 60s, but like it, I mean, although I was in the 60s then, this is like 84, 85, 86. So I, you know, I didn't have anywhere to get access to information. It's so difficult to imagine that now because we have access to everything. So if you see, you know, the concept of clairvoyance, the concept of psychics, I had not had it until I was like 11, 12 years old. And then it was a vaguely terrifying idea that was painted to me as like connected to evil and bad things. So I really didn't know what to do with these experiences at all, like absolutely no idea. So yes, that was horrible, very hard. I thought I was going insane, but I kept it mainly to myself and got into a habit of absolutely not telling anyone about anything that I could see, any experience I was having. You know, you protect yourself and you protect yourself very well by just keeping your fucking mouth closed. But that became very much more difficult. And as I got older, it became impossible. And so 16, 17, it just became absolutely like overwhelming. And that's when I first had my first tarot reading, had my first
Wow.
tarot reading, 16, 17. Yeah. I was too scared to even go near tarot cards. It was not something that I'd like, it was bad. It was evil. It was an amazing reading. And then everything else is history. I guess I became a reader myself, et
When did
cetera.
you purchase your first deck, or was it given to you, or?
I went straight out after that first reading, and I immediately bought the same deck. And I had like no money. I'd left home when I was 15. I was like scraping around doing like really dodgy jobs, working, doing whatever. And so the money that I had was extremely precious. And I did had this reading and then felt this strong connection to those cards. And I still have those cards that I bought. They have them.
What?
Yeah, they're back down here. And they're old and dog-eared, and I love them. I mean, yeah. So that was my first opening into the occult world, and then from there, I was like, oh my God, there are books. Very few books at that time. Really expensive books. Like you're talking £75 for a fucking copy of like Liber 2 or something. Like
Oh
crazy.
my God.
So long ago,
You get
really
that
far
for free
ages.
now.
I know you can get everything for free, thank God, but you should. But like, this is one of the things that we've spoken about, like the access to information and knowledge. It's like, especially in the occult and magical worlds, it's intentionally kept away from anyone that's not a cis white man. Like that's truly always been, I mean, certainly in the Western esoteric tradition, always been the case. Like it's very intentional. I mean, most of these fuckers, like John Dee, like what a piece of shit. Like I know he's, but he's. But like, have you read his stuff? Like fucking
No, I
hell.
haven't. Who is John Dee?
Oh, John Dee. He was Queen Elizabeth's alchemist and magician, and not just Queen. Like very, very responsible. Some would say for huge parts of colonial exploitation, like magically, astrologically, he made all these predictions. Yeah, it's wild stuff.
Wow.
And like a very well-respected magical worker in these circles, or certainly the circles that I was beginning to be introduced into. And it was really this idea of the people that held all the power and the people that held all the knowledge were literally like quite literally gross, creepy old white men. And that was my, that was who I had to engage with in any capacity whatsoever to get any knowledge. So I'm very up for like that changing. And obviously it has changed, it is changing, but still it's depressing because you still see, even on fucking Instagram with this like new generation of people that are much younger than me, there's still the fucking cis white dudes dominating everything.
Gatekeeping.
Gatekeeping. How dare they? How dare they? Makes me my blood boil. Because so many of them, I mean, I sit there and I'm like, okay, I've been doing this for 22 years. Like, I've got to be honest. I sit and I look at some of these people that are putting themselves, claiming to be, powerful magical practitioners, and they're whatever. The basic cis white dudes, I mean, and it's like, oh God. It makes me so mad. It makes me so fucking angry. And I'm just like, I've got to disengage, disengage, disengage. So I don't engage with them. But the whole, have you seen the film Dark Song?
No, I
Yeah.
haven't.
You've got to watch it. Everyone should watch that film for so many reasons. Mainly because I have never seen a more accurate portrayal. I think it's called The Dark Song, a more accurate portrayal of British occult ritualists than trade there. Like it's so accurate, and when you see the film you'll know what I mean. Because
Oh, is it A Dark Song or something?
yes, A Dark Song.
Irish, British. What?
You'll love the film. Didn't I give you the best film recommendation last time?
The
I would like to take credit for that, not the film, but the recommendation
Yes.
of
That
it.
was such a hilarious movie. But I mean, it's also a good movie because it's like telling, it's like a warning against doing unethical magic.
You can't fuck about with this shit. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, A Dark Song is really, it's a totally different film. I love it for different reasons. But the ending is so disappointing. That's all I can say to you is like, they let it go so bad with the ending. It was so like, we need to do another, we need to do a follow-up podcast because I want us to talk about the
Let's
ending
do
of
a
A Dark Song.
review. I'm looking at this.
So
This is
depressing.
using the book of Abramelin. How do you say that? Abramelin. The book of Abramelin to summon her guardian angel. That's already
It's right up your street.
some real shit.
This is up some, this is some, this is, I'm telling you. But I, why I like that portrayal so much was it's very accurate in so many ways, but particularly because the characterization of the main occultist, so I'm not gonna, no spoilers or anything, apart from the ending is fucking disappointing. The main character is this, you know, scruffy, unwashed, kind of long bearded, gruff, cis white dude who is apparently one of the most powerful magicians in like the West. I know, like I'm vomiting. But what's funny is that like these dudes literally exist that consider themselves to be this, that others consider to be this, and they literally are like him, which is to say, like, you know, I'm not saying social skills are super important, but they're like beneficial, I guess. You know, none of those, and just basically being a C word. And that film was so triggering for me because I was like, I have spent years of my life battling through men like him, men like him, and I'm over it. And this is why I have like absolutely nothing to do now with any sort of, you know, yeah, I don't, the only group work that I do is I lead my own groups. Like I'm not ever entering into any sort of magical engagement with any cis white dude ever again. Amen. Ever again.
Oh
That's
yeah,
it.
because I think you said you've had some you've had well you've been in the game for a minute, so you probably have, I guess, some pretty interesting stories. Are there any that you would care to share with us?
I think without going into like traumatic,
Discreetly.
re-traumatizing detail, I think
Oh yeah.
one of the things that still, you know, when you like you get to a certain point in your life and you look back and you're like, how did that happen? Why did you do that? What the fuck were you thinking? I have a lot of those moments. And for me, I was in this sort of super abusive relationship with from the age of 14 to 20. Two, I think, 21, 22. I can't do the maths. With a cis white dude who was 19 years older than me, right? And yeah, and the ways in which I was groomed as a 14-year-old, as a child, to be in that relationship mirror exactly the ways in which people, not just young women, mainly actually not young women. In my experience, that I was one of the only women that was ever in these groups, but mirrors the way in which these older, usually they are men in their 30s or 40s, fucking hell. Anyway, people to like, you know, seduce people with promises of like power. What do dickheads want more than anything? They want more power, right? Like I as a, you know, super not doing too well on the mental health front, 14-year-old abused girl, didn't really want power. I just wanted to not feel so powerless. And they absolutely used that to, and also I was like getting all of this crazy shit happening to me all the time. I just wanted somebody who knew what it was, tell me how to manage it. And I gotta be fair, you know, like that I did, you know, wasn't all bad. I did learn a huge amount. But you know, you have to adapt what you learn and make it work for you. And that took a while to do. So yes, I mean, I think just be very, all I would say is if anyone that's just sort of starting out interested in exploring occult groups, esoteric stuff, specifically occult initiations, ritual magic groups, or groups that require initiations, do not leave your critical engagement at the door. Just don't do that. It is absolutely possible to have deeply meaningful, transformative spiritual experience without being humiliated, without being made to feel like you're unsafe. And in fact, humiliation and not being safe are true barriers to actual most powerful magical work. So, if there's ever any weird power dynamics that you're feeling, run away and find a better group of people to access the same power.
Yeah, were you ever like a solitary witch? Not really, I
So,
guess, sort of.
yes, no, yeah. What happened is after I went through various initiations of different esoteric groups in the Western esoteric tradition, in mainly in Glastonbury. So this is where I was when I had that first reading, and then I ended up moving there and living there for 7 years. And every single group that I was involved in I reached a certain point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like there was something awful about them. I mean, one could say maybe the problem is me, but I prefer not. And so, yeah, I left. I just kept on like, but the sad thing is, I was always looking for a group of a supportive community. And in the end, I just couldn't find it. So I practiced as a solitary witch primarily, like almost entirely, in fact, for years and years and years.
I was a solitary witch, quote unquote, for I guess maybe 7 to 8 years. I was like, throughout college and then after college, because I grew up. I was born the year the internet was created, but I guess my occult background was, I guess from books. So like I would just order a lot of books on Amazon, but there wasn't anything on social media really about being a witch as far as like mainstream stuff. So yeah, those are really good pointers because a lot of times, especially women get taken advantage of in a lot of spiritual traditions. And there's like, yeah, just a lot of yeah, a lot of sexual manipulation and binding too. So definitely I tell people look out for that kind of stuff. And it's predators are still on Instagram also. So just because it's like an IG community or a web community doesn't mean that there aren't still predatorial figures. So what can you describe a little bit about Glastonbury? There's like a lot of my audience is from the US. So I know what I know about Glastonbury is that Beyoncé was the one of the first like I think black women or something to perform there.
Fucking
That
shocking.
performance. Oh my God. I feel like whenever you describe Glastonbury to me, I was like, I know she probably did some kind of channeling ritual or something for the energy. Because even at one point, I could swear I saw her face morph. Like, you know how you see spirits on people and you're like, what in the world? She was channeling like just a lot of like fire femme energy. Like, I'm here to destroy this whole shit with my whole
Well,
performance.
you know Beyoncé, she's doing with that.
Yes.
Yes, I mean Glastonbury. So the Glastonbury Festival is the thing that most people have know. That Glastonbury is famous for is this huge music festival, which actually is about 5 miles outside of the town itself. But the town of Glastonbury itself is this pretty small, quite rural, town, ancient town that sits in the middle of incredibly sacred landscape. And the town itself, way before the music festival, was a site of pilgrimage for literally thousands of years. There's stone circles, there's Neolithic monuments, there's the Glastonbury
Oh
Tor,
my God.
amazing, hit natural hill. Well, they think it's, some people say it's natural, some people say that it was built. Anyway, it's this huge, really big grass hill with a church tower on the top of them at the moment, currently. I mean, it's like 500 years old, this church tower. But it is this place where, do you know about ley lines? Like so there are so many ley lines that cross Glastonbury, and the Mary and the Michael line are two of the most important, significant ley lines in the British Isles, and they both cross on the tour, and then again another in the Abbey in Glastonbury. So Glastonbury is this very sacred landscape. It's incredibly beautiful. It's extremely green. Just think of green rolling hills, and then these very ancient British stone, you know, buildings. There's a very old abbey there. Anyway, it is the center in England of spirituality. It's considered to be the heart chakra of the you know, land. And there is a huge amount of New Age bullshit, right? So all of we're talking about on Instagram, you've got to have discernment, right? There are some people that you just think, what are you doing? What are you talking about? This is some fucking bullshit. Well, Glastonbury is like the bullshit headquarters, as well as the incredible, true, authentic, powerful spirit. You know how it is. It's like any power, any energy, it draws in good and bad. Power and energy is not good or bad. It is just. And so it just is. And so Glastonbury is just like that. You know, I lived there for 7 years, which it seems insane to me now, because I go back every so often. So one of my dearest friends has a house, a flat there, like a holiday vacation, as you say in American, a holiday flat, we say, in Glastonbury. And so Ames and I go there very, very regularly. And I love it, but I can only last 2-3 days maximum, because the energies of that place are so intense. Like, we've got to go. Yeah, so I lived there for 7 years, and it's like there's more tarot readers and psychics, more crystal shops, more esoteric bookshops there than anywhere else in, I think, ever in the world. Like, I literally think that's true. Like, every other shop in Glastonbury is a crystal shop or a tarot reader. So that's where I started myself as a reader, and where I became so successful. But it was. Yeah, I was.
Was it like to kind of, what was it like? Was it pretty competitive or just pretty community?
The most competitive. Like, oh my gosh. I've always just had this assumed solidarity with women and femmes. Like, I just straight up, even as a naive 17-year-old, when I started, maybe it was like 18, 17 or 18, I can't remember, when I started working, you know, offering readings professionally, I mean, I was so naive. I just assumed that, you know, the nice old lady in the shop next door would be nice to me. Ooh. And she would not. She put a fucking hex on me day one.
Oh no.
It was great, like, you know, fucking wild shit, Glastonbury. Oh man. That's for the memoir. But yeah.
Yes. Don't live there. My God. That's super interesting. I mean, people think New Orleans too. It's like everyone's like, ha ha ha, but it's like, girl, you better watch out. That's watch where you're walking.
So much. I think it must be. I've not been to New Orleans, but I can imagine that it is extremely similar. You know, like it's all. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it's not in that sense of, you know, people go to Glastonbury because they're drawn to the spiritual energies and to spiritual practice. And that's great, but there's a lot. I think that maybe the difference is in Glastonbury, there's a hell of a lot of love and light bullshit. And light bullshit is everywhere. And
what? Yeah, here it's kind of like there's a lot of death. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of just like dead people, energy, dead everywhere. Because right. it was a port, and a lot of cultures coexisted here. Well, not coexisted, but we're here together. I got to make a trip. I would love to see Glastonbury and feel the energy and stuff. And you got to come to New Orleans. I know you lived in New York for a bit. What were you doing whenever you lived in New York?
So I moved to, I'd worked in New York. I was coming to New York every 3-4 months for work. So I worked by that stage. I had built up a business as a psychic with a lot of New York clients. So every 4 months I would come to New York just to do readings and see clients face to face and then come back. And so at the time, you know, it sounds so great, doesn't it? But like, oh God, I was ready
for tired as shit.
Oh my God, exactly. I was
Oh.
tired. And also, you know how expensive New York is? It doesn't matter how much I was charging, I would still come home with like £10. You know, I
Oh
remember
my God.
it was not, but I loved it because I loved New York and I loved the glamour. And I was, you know, working for like big corporate clients, going to the headquarters of Ralph Lauren to do a tarot reading is fucking,
Wow.
although very intimidating, actually. Although now I'm not intimidated, but like when I was like terrified. These like models who stand behind the podiums like at every level of Ralph Lauren to let you in or not, and they just look at you and you've got to show four forms of ID and they're judging you through their like tiny little like whatever.
Wow.
I don't miss that. But so I was going to New York really regularly, and at the time I was living where I live now in England, and I thought, God, I gotta find a relationship. I gotta find someone in New York to have a relationship with, so I don't have to spend so much money on hotel rooms. Because no, I don't. You know, I stay in nice hotels. It's 5-star for me. I mean, I'm
Yes.
sorry, but so I mean, truly, I was spending thousands of dollars every fucking 4 months on these. Well, they weren't even really nice. They were just not shit. But because it's like Manhattan, you know, you're paying so much fucking money anyway. So always the pragmatist, I was thinking, okay, I mean, I was married, we were in a non-monogamous, ethically non-monogamous relationships. I believe strongly in ethical non-monogamy. And so my husband at the time had another relationship. I was said to him, I was like, I've got to find someone in New York to so I'd have to be, you know, so I can stay with them. And also I thought, well, it would be nice also to just have someone to go out with rather than just dating Tinder all the time, you know.
Ugh, Tinder. Ooh,
I know.
bah.
Although I feel like next product I'm going to be making is like how to win at Tinder psychically, because I have bagged me some incredible connections on Tinder.
What?
And Tinder is such a powerful intuitive tool because you're moving so fast.
Divination, basically.
Yes, it's divination. It's like yes or fucking no. But your key, let me tell you, this is a free fucking tip, is do not hold in your head, do I want to fuck this person? That is not the question.
Oh, hey, say it.
Listen to
Say
this.
this.
Do not ask that question. Open your Tinder with intention, and your intention is, depending on what you want, I want to meet someone that's going to benefit me. I want to meet somebody who's going to enrich my life, some other. And then you're not looking at their fucking ugly faces. You're looking at them with fresh eyes, and those fresh eyes are they going to benefit me or not? And then you swipe left or you swipe right, and then you look at your matches afterwards, and you start engaging in a basic ask conversation, like super basic, but like don't start with the fucking hi. Just be like, get to it and get to a meeting ASAP. And I'm telling you, there is gold to be mined. I have met some of the most incredibly powerful, valuable, significant friends, business contacts, like sugar daddies, like Tinder shit.
Wow.
Like I met, anyway, this is offline, Keon.
Okay.
I met like extremely like billionaires who
Wow.
we never had sex. We would just go wherever I wanted, whichever restaurant, in the Lamborghini, he would drive, we would go, I would eat whatever I wanted off the menu.
Wow.
We'd talk about actually really genuinely interesting shit. And then he would drive me home and I was like, this is the best. So
Wow, off the record for sure.
Tinder, I don't mind that. It's just maybe who it is.
That is so funny because I think I wonder also that's interesting because I wonder if the reason people get caught in so many loops with Tinder is because they're coming at it from that I guess the orientation or the mindset of like baseline, do I want to have sex with this
Yeah.
person? Are they
Well,
sexually attractive? And then
well,
that is the
also
premise. Yeah.
coming with bad energy. I don't mean that in like you've got bad energy, but I mean like you've got to come to this app as if it is any form of divination. If you're doing it right, you approach your phone, you approach opening the app like you would approach your I Ching or your tarot cards. You come with respect and you come with intention. If you come with any sort of like you know, like think about it. If you're coming opening the app with like low self-esteem, just like you open the tarot cards with low self-esteem, well, you're gonna be read. Mm-hmm. And it will be about that. Well, that's exactly what will happen when you're on Tinder. So I'm telling you, like in all seriousness, there is a master way to master Tinder as a psychic or an intuitive or anyone that is just wants to be more intentional. And the key thing is be intentional. You want to be connecting to people that will benefit you. Just leave it at that. It doesn't have to be any more. Don't, you know, anyway, I got a lot of benefit.
Do it during a Venus hour.
Yes, on a Friday.
Yes.
Why not? Like Venus hour on a Friday. Do get have a self-love bath, like really like feel so clear and confident that of what you bring to the table, know your worth and be like, who's gonna show up to benefit me? Mm. And then swipe. And then because you know what? It's often let's put it this way. If you don't have great self-esteem, you're gonna be passing up on people that you will, not because they're not attractive, but because you think that you might be rejected by them. Whereas if you're coming to it from this like place of power and solidity and that you're not even looking to fuck, maybe you're looking to fuck, but like, oh my God, there's so much more than fucking available on Tinder. That's all.
Wow, this could totally be a thing. I feel like we might need to do an IGTV or a webinar on this.
I know.
These are some gems.
I did this professionally. I was the professional Tinderer of, like the psychic Tinderer for 2 months. So at a certain point, I was doing my PhD, do not recommend, 1 out of 10. And I was very fucking poor and making money any way that I could. And so one of these guys that I met on Tinder, and had absolutely zero sexual chemistry with, is a good friend of mine to this day, paid me £1,000 a month, which by the way, to me then was, you might as well have given me £1 million. Well, maybe not, but like it was a lot of money. To once a week log on as him onto Tinder. And because Tinder has this passport app, you know, location, you can change its location. So I would locate, I would log in as him, go to his location, or actually, that's a whole, I got a lot of Tinder tips. I don't want to be.
Yeah, you don't give all the secrets away now.
Hold me back. Anyway, he paid me money and I would Tinder match for him. And then I would, you know, it was kind of a bit dodgy because I was like, I just don't know if I'm happy to be sending messages to these women on your behalf. He was a lazy motherfucker.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's money. Look, I'm telling you, I feel like I can pull people out of nowhere through Tinder.
Could be a whole show. Oh my God, this is.
Anyway, so I didn't even tell you. But anyway, this is how I met my now spouse. So I was in New York looking for someone to, like, you know, basically have a good time with, and I was on OkCupid, not Tinder, but all sorts of dating sites are usable in this way, and had that thought, who can benefit me? And I came across Ames' profile and was just like, just stopped dead in my tracks. I cannot describe to you. I know people say, you know, like this sort of cliche shit, but I mean, I have been around many blocks, put it that way, you know. And when I encountered Ames' picture, and their profile, I was just like, oh my God, who is this person? And I felt this immediate connection, like I've not known ever before or since. And I'm in the business of feeling connections, you know, like I got it. This was next level. And so I messaged them and they didn't respond for 2 weeks. And I was like,
oh shit.
I was like, fuck you. I told myself, fuck, I was like, extremely attractive, like they're obviously you know, absolute fuck boy, so fine, no problem.
How long have y'all been together?
We've been together for, I think it's our fourth year now. We married. We anyway, so we fell in love. I left my husband. I moved over to New York and lived in New York for 2 years. We were living.
Wow. So did you have any fear of commitment issues or anything like that at any point?
Nope. Not with them. No. I mean, I gotta be honest. I mean, this is my fourth marriage. I don't really have fear of commitment issues, Keon.
Oh, never mind.
Just want to try it again. Like truly, I you know, I joke about it, but also, you know, I think that this idea of marriage, this idea of relationships as being like singular, permanent things is the most fucked up bullshit. Nothing is singular, nothing is permanent. Like, why, what the, nothing is singular, nothing is permanent. So
Exactly.
anyway, so yeah, that's how I was in New York, and then I came back here because we just had this urgency to return. I have a collection of physical disabilities and mental health issues. Who amongst us does not? But like, truly now after this
For
last year,
real.
and the American health system was just doesn't exist. It doesn't fucking exist. And coming from Britain, where we have the National Health Service, which is a completely free, absolute universal health care. Right? It's absolutely free and universal, and it is incredible. You don't pay a penny, not one penny. We just had this urgency. Like I was getting unwell, and we had to come back. So, but there was also this other weird urgency. We were like, we've got to move, we've got to move, like this next 6 months. So we relocated. We have four animals. We relocated everything.
Wow.
We shipped all these cats in fucking crates and a dog in a crate. And they had a far, far more fun time than us. They were like fucking first class. We were so angry. I moved back here, and so then the pandemic hit.
Damn.
Every day we're like, thank God. Well, now we're in like a three-bedroom detached house with a huge garden backing onto a field, you know, like a field. Whereas in New York, we were in a big one-bedroom. Like, fuck me. I've, you know, anyway, yeah, I think of all my friends that are still in those one bedrooms.
Yeah, New York is too crowded. So how did you get into ceremonial magic? And because I want to talk about Ouroboros limited editions.
Yes, I'm sorry, I've spoken so much already.
No, this is so great. Keep doing all the talking.
The ceremonial magic, well, just as I described, really. So those various esoteric occult groups were where I first encountered ceremonial magic. And the only ceremonial magic that was really available was Crowleyan, you know, Aleister Crowley's well, Crowleyan ritual magic, which is, I don't know how to best describe it. It's very powerful. It can be incredibly effective. It's not the only way to do ritual magic. And I think one of the problems with problems, but one of the multiple problems of communities, occult communities and ritual, specifically those around ritual magic, is that there's this obsession with purity, right? Doing everything precisely, correctly, in this particular, in the Western esoteric tradition, connected to like anyway, and I just think that's really fucked up and not helpful, not good. So that's how I got into ritual magic. And after I left these various groups, I still had all of this knowledge, of course. I'd read all of the books, was still reading all of the books, was thinking about these things, and thought, you know, there has to be a way to create a version. Because like, true, really, what is ritual magic? Ritual magic is just the very clear intention to create and to go through processes, i.e. rituals, that align the subconscious with the conscious will, right? So like, that's why we do rituals, is because we're going through the motions that indicate to our subconscious, oh, something is changing state here, something different is happening, we're doing something that's important. And so if we take that as the basis, and we bring in an education of the various different magical correspondence. So that's one thing that I'm extremely grateful for in my magical education is, you know, to be an effective magical practitioner, you can't just, it's not just about, you know, having the ability to concentrate your mind on one thing to the exclusion of all else, although that is very important. But in order to be an effective magical practitioner, you've got to know your correspondence, you've got to know your saints, you've got to know who and where you're getting what you can draw upon and who you can draw upon, basically, right? Like, which herbs, which stones, which beings, which deities, which colors, which scents, which everything. And if you have that knowledge or the ability to access that knowledge, I'm not saying you need to know like what every fucking crystal means, although, you know, as you go through, you know, life, you do collect knowledge about things, but it is about being able to pull these different resources and influences and correspondence together. Mm. And then if you can layer that on top of a tradition of magical work that has been going on for hundreds, some could say thousands of years, depending on your tradition, then you've got something pretty powerful there. You've got a process that you go through, which is going to have impact. It definitely will. So Ouroboros, which is the talisman business, I guess, the being that I created, that I started, is what came from this desire to create true magical talismans. So mm-hmm. talismans are sort of, they are magical beings that are, it's like magical energy imbued into solid gold pieces. So a talisman or an amulet, they're two different things. An amulet was used to sort of bring in good energy towards a certain thing. Talismans traditionally were like protective, so they would guard you against bad things. But really, talismans are a way of harnessing specific astrological energy and concretizing them or crystallizing them into a physical being. So mm-hmm. I was making these talismans for myself for a long time, and I was like, why am I, you know, it's a fucking long ass process to make these things. Like, this is a 3-hour ritual sometimes at very set specific times, most mm-hmm. important. So astrologically, everything has to be as auspicious as it possibly can be for the intention that you have. So what I mean by that is we create different types of talismans. So love talismans, money talismans, protection talismans. If I'm creating a money talisman, I want the astrology at the moment that I create that talisman to be absolutely as supportive and auspicious towards the gaining of wealth and money and entitlement to money as it can possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're doing is we're really choosing, if you like, the birth date of this talisman. So you think about, like, I mean, you know this, I'm telling you this, like, you don't know it, you fucking the expert.
I'm just interviewing, so.
I'm gonna carry on. So, you know, like our birth chart, if you like, a way of thinking about it is like, you are the talisman of your birth chart, right? Like, I am the talisman of the moment when I was born, i.e. we are the living incarnation of where the planets were and in which, you know, houses at the moment of our birth. So when we're creating talismans, we're choosing, what do we want to be like, what characteristics do we want to crystallize in and seal into this piece of gold? That's what we seal particular astrological characteristics and powers, including, when with the ritual magic, I always work with Archangel Michael. It's one of the powers, the deities, I don't think they'd be happy called a deity, one of the powers that I work with. And so we're crystallizing in the incredible power of Archangel Michael, the energy of a very specific astrological moment into those talismans. And then they sell out. We make like 30 at a time. We release them every 2 months because it's a fucking long ass process to create, find, make, clean, cleanse, produce. And then they sell out like 5 hours, they're gone. Isn't
they
that-
are gone.
No, I love it.
So amazing. Well, one of the last things I wanted to talk to you about was maybe some of your favorite witch spells or tricks or hacks, life hacks.
I mean, I gave you Tinder. What else are you looking for here? I mean,
oh my God, that was such a great tip. Well, period. I think people should check out the Ouroboros Instagram for some love magic tips.
Yeah, love magic is extremely good. Also, my biggest tip really is get boundaries. Like, truly get boundaries. I'm not just saying that because I've got a Boundaries to Women in Business program, which I've just launched today.
Oh.
But however, like, in all seriousness, like, everything that I have learned and got and survived through this whole crazy journey of being 22 years now in this world is that, holy shit, if you get nothing else, get yourself some boundaries. And what I mean by that is get really, really clear about what you want in any situation and what you are not prepared to put up with, and stick to that. Trust yourself, honor yourself above all else, really, especially if you're not a cis white man. Fucking prioritize yourself and prioritize your safety, like, truly. And sometimes that means being considered rude, and fuck it. I mean, I have literally got fuck politeness tattooed on my arm. So like, I really can go in the bin. And I don't mean like be rude. I mean, this concept of politeness, which is encourages women and femmes to put themselves, their physical safety at, like, underneath this need to be culturally acceptable. Like, fuck that. Anyway, it's not easy. And it's not always safe to like fuck politeness, and it's not always safe for everyone in every situation. But if you, yeah, prioritize your safety and get some boundaries, and also boundaries for women in business. If you have a business, you need some fucking boundaries. If you charge money for anything, if you're in a job, you need boundaries. I got you.
Sign up. Well, that's all I wanted to talk about. Thank you so much for coming on to my show. You're gonna have to come back.
It was such a pleasure. This was my favorite. I know, I need to come back because we need to do a review of A Dark Song, because
I just need to watch it.
I need to watch it again. I'm so disappointed by the ending. I'm like, fuck that.
Well, is there anything else that you wanted to tell the people before I stop recording?
Only that I run the Spiritual Life Upgrade, which is my 12-month mentorship. If you feel like any of what I'm talking about resonates with you, or you feel, I know, like you just want to know more, hit me up on Instagram, because I'm always looking for, you know, people that are the right fit to join. We get applications all the time, but you know, they're not always from people that are right. And we have an incredible community of, you know these people. They're just fucking amazing, like brilliant, kind, funny, self-aware, you know, good people. So if you think that's you, message me on Instagram, and you'll probably get an automated reply that says, Kate doesn't check this inbox, but do it anyway, and I will reply.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Such a pleasure.